When I was in high school, he got me a job in a factory. It paid very well, but I hated every minute of it. I hated being there a half an hour. My dad was one of these guys where if you're starting work at 7:30, you're there at 7. And you get a coffee and you kind of ease into the day. But by 7:30, you're ready to go. And so I'd work from 7:30 to 3:30 every day. And it was not fun work. I remember sweeping the floor of the warehouse. And in my mind, I'm building these entrepreneurial plans because I knew this was not the life I was going to live.
Welcome to the Edge of Excellence podcast. This show is for current and aspiring leaders that are dedicated to showing up every day in their lives with excellence. We break down the careers of those excelling so you can understand what is out there and how to rise up in every field you choose. Let's get the show on the road, shall we? Your host has spent his life promoting global entrepreneurship, helping 20-somethings find their passion, and working to help others achieve excellence. CEO of CollegeWorks, Matt Stewart.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for subscribing. Got a great friend on the show today, Steve Kearley, all the way from Canada. He's going to talk to us about the entrepreneurial gene. He knows a lot of entrepreneurs, and we're going to get one man's opinion to gauge if you've got it. We're going to talk about gauging yourself against yourself and not others, and what it really means to network. It's a very interesting show. Don't forget to tell your friends. Welcome to the Edge of Excellence. Well, Steve Kearley, up in Canada, in the Great White North, thank you for making time to share your insight and joining us on the Edge of Excellence.
Well, thanks, Matt. I'm really excited to be here and excited to catch up. It's been a little while since we've been together and chatted, so this is going to be a fun hour.
And there's a reason for that. All your vacations are based on alcohol. Do a vacation that's not based on alcohol so I can come with my wife.
Okay, so it's not alcohol. It's just nice, fine wines.
Yeah, wine tasting in France. And we're going to have to get into all our world travels on this call. But before we get into our world travels, before we get into volunteer impact and how you do one thing is how you do everything, before we get into building a respected brand and gracefully exiting with 9 figures in your pocket, I got to know, Steve, what is your definition of excellence?
My definition of excellence, that's a great question. And, you know, all too often, we compare ourselves against others when we're measuring excellence in our own lives. And that's, I just found, it took a while, but I found that that was a wrong measurement. We all have a unique ability. We're all good at certain things and mediocre at others. And so really, for me, it took a while to understand measuring excellence in my life is measuring against myself. So understanding what I'm good at, understanding what I'm great at, and then measuring how I grow personally against where I was a month, a year ago, 2 years ago, 10 years ago. And if I can see growth, then I feel like I'm on a track to excellence.
Okay, so you're getting rid of all the things you're not good at. I know you've done the Strength Finder. I know you've done DISC. I know you've done Myers-Briggs. I know that you and I are a little older than our audience. So we in our 20s and 30s figured out, okay, we're good at these certain things and we suck at accounting, let's say, both of us suck
at. Oh, I do. I do suck at accounting.
Because I know that you're a solid DI and we have a hard time with accounting. So you give up on accounting and you focus on the things that are your unique abilities, and unique abilities are things you're good at that you also like doing. So we'll define that term for the audience. And excellence is constantly focusing on those unique abilities over time and tracking your growth. And you said you're on the path to excellence. Do you ever get to excellence?
I don't think so. You know, we're always constantly learning, striving to get better. There's no way I can see that I'll get to a point where I feel like, okay, I'm here. So it's a constant journey. It's a constant path. And it's a commitment to lifelong learning. It's a commitment to growing personally. And it's a commitment to achieving the goals you set out to achieve. And those are very easy to measure yourself with.
Okay, so Lifelong learning, growing personally, achieving goals, focusing your unique abilities, tracking over time. You may never get there. And you know Sanjay Kapoor. I know. I think you were at that speech in 2008 in India where he taught karma yoga. If you have clarity of intent, purity of heart, sincerity of action, let go of the outcome and enjoy the process. So you're a process.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. A process guy. Yeah. And there's 20 million people in Canada. Did you know that Canada was a colony of the United States until 15 years ago?
I did know that. And we're celebrating our 15 year freedom centennial.
Good. So let's go back a little bit, back to the start to figure out, like, what did you do in your life to be able to join the global board of the largest entrepreneur organization in the world? Oh, and I didn't show you this. Where is it? I got my EO sweater on in honor of Steve Kearley today. We know each other from that organization, from being volunteers and becoming friends, which is a great way to become friends. You volunteer, you sit on a board, you're doing it for free, you have the same values. But before we get into being on the global board, before we get into living life on your own terms, before we get into your global travel, I mean, you've been, I don't know how many countries have you been to?
78 to date.
Oh my God, I've been to 73. I knew you'd be over me because I missed those trips where you guys are cruising.
Creep by. Yeah, well, you've got to get back on those trips with us.
Well, now that I don't have kids anymore, I think I will.
You do have kids.
Oh yeah, I do. But they don't live here anymore.
That's right. Important to understand.
And what is high school called in Canada?
It's actually called high school.
Oh, it is. Okay. So what were you like in high school? What was life like? Where did you see yourself? What path were you on?
Yeah, that's probably a very good question, Matt, because that's probably an era of my life where I didn't really kind of understand myself and maybe a little more introverted, you know, again, because measuring myself against others, which is very easy for teens to do, you know, you kind of feel you're not quite as good as everyone else. And it was after high school where
could you imagine having Instagram? Like you and I were, we're not as good as anybody else. At least we got to go home and not worry about it. Can you imagine the measurement now? Ugh.
Oh, it's terrible. I look at my grandkids. Yes, I'm old enough to have grandkids. I've got an 11-year-old granddaughter, and I'm very fearful of the environment she's growing up in with social media and the fact that she'll probably always feel she's never as good as her friends and people that she's connected to. But by the way, that's a false presentation of anybody's life, what you see on social media. So, but unfortunately, at 11 years old, you haven't figured that out yet.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't understand yourself. If you're listening right now, this is great because I don't think anybody understands themselves in high school. Now they may be super confident and super arrogant and not introverted and outgoing, but I think that's a mask and because all the not all of them, but a lot of the arrogant pains in the butts become nice people later because that was just a facade. And a lot of the introverts that had no confidence become confident later because you didn't understand yourself. I didn't understand myself. Nobody understands themselves. You're a little introverted. We're all measuring ourselves against others. And God, I hope Instagram goes out of business because it's just such a nasty thing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
What else was going on?
The one thing I always had, and I guess it's in my DNA, and we talk about this often in EO and it just in our conversations, is something we call the E gene, the entrepreneurial gene. And I think, you know, not that it can't be developed, but a lot of times people are just naturally born with an entrepreneurial mindset. I always, even though I was just trying to discover who I was, trying to gain confidence, you know, constantly measuring myself against the high school jock and the rock and rollers who had the cool Camaros and all the fun stuff. And they looked like the coolest guys. Kind of funny story, probably 30 years after high school, maybe not quite 30, maybe 25. I connected with a guy I went to high school with. Our kids ended up playing hockey together in the same community we're in now. He was the popular guy in school. He had the long curly hair back in the 70s. That was important. And, you know, he had all the girls and he was Mr. Popularity. And, you know, fast forward 25 years, he was living a hand-to-mouth existence, probably on his third wife, at least his second. And, you know, I looked at it and I said, man, what I was measuring in high school and what we both became are miles apart.
I had the exact same experience, and it was at an EO function. And I went down to the Surf and Sand Hotel, which you've probably been to here in Laguna Beach. And I was driving my red convertible Ferrari, which I was so excited to have because I had that. I had to still have that cool car that I didn't have so I could be one of those guys. And so Jill and I drive down in the red Ferrari, and I think I was like 28, 29 years old. And there was this kid in college, not high school for me, and he used to heckle me. Stewie, why are you working so hard? Stewie, what are you doing? Stewie, don't be a loser. Come out drinking with us. And I would hear it all the time from this guy. I don't remember his last name. His first name was Aaron. And I drive into the Surf and Sand in my Ferrari, and he's the valet. And he was a year older. I know. Awesome. I was 20, 29. He was 30. And I'm like, whoa. And I felt all self-conscious. And then we go in, and they had one of those, like, before you get into the main dining room, little places you have cocktails. And they must have been short on staff. He's working the bar. And I'm talking to him a little bit. And I'm talking to Jill, feeling really weird. And then we go to the sit down. I'm sitting next to Mark Moses. Mark Moses, me, Jill. And his arm comes around and grabs
Mark
my plate.
Moses is a Canadian, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, we won't talk about Canadians anymore. His arm comes in and grabs my food. So he was the valet, the bartender, and the busboy. And, you know, he grew up in Laguna Beach, had all the wealth in the world and all the advantage. And I was embarrassed. And I said to Jill, God, I'm so embarrassed. Jill goes, you shouldn't be embarrassed. He should be embarrassed. He bagged on you for working in college. And it's just so funny how it flipped around. So you and I have this same, oh, I wish I had that. And I wish I was that. And maybe that fueled us. We had a chip on our shoulder. But in high school, you're kind of not understanding. And then what happens?
Well, we did actually become friends when our kids were, connected. But my point is, we spend time worried about things that aren't important and comparing ourselves to people that really are insignificant in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, at the end of the day, the focus should always be on just compare yourself to yourself, always grow. And, you know, the fact it's a loser's game to compare yourself against others when you're at different places in your life, you do have different skill sets, like I talked about earlier, unique abilities. So that was kind of an eye-opening experience for me that, you know, I spent more time in high school worried about what other people thought and how I could be compared to them or the in crowd, if you will. And it was just a waste of time.
My daughter never listens to this, but I mean, you've got all these physical attributes on Instagram, their butts better, their boobs are bigger, their dinner's nicer, their vacation is better. And your term insignificance, it's insignificant. So Steve and I, our relationship was built on a volunteer organization that we were working on and volunteering on and calling each other and sharing ideas. And then there was respect and there was admiration and there was contribution and there was regard. And through our lives, you know, things have gone wrong and there's checking in and helping out and more regard and more respect and more contribution. And, you know, I always think that anytime any of my friends I've met on a volunteer board, like, are my tightest friends because, you know, the values are the same. You know, they're givers, not takers. And that's significant. And we have relationships and we know each other's kids and we go on trips and we go to each other's houses. And that's significant. That person on Instagram with a great butt or that person on Instagram that's driving a nice car are really, the insignificance is insignificant to you. And in fact, they're detrimental because you feel worse and you feel non-confident and you're staying in bed. So you and I got to realize that before there was Instagram, and you started comparing yourself to your goals and where you wanted to go and what you wanted to do and kind of ignored the comparison to others, which might be a reason to pull over your car if you're listening right now at 1.5 speed, always 1.5 speed, pull over, take a note, don't do it while you're driving. But that might be some serious takeaway to contemplate. Who am I comparing myself to? How significant are they in my life? Why am I comparing myself to them? And how can I switch that and compare it to myself? Is that a U2 signed guitar by the Edge you have in your background?
That is. Yeah. My family gave that to me for my 50th birthday.
Wow.
I'm a very big U2 fan. I didn't get to see them at the Sphere. I'm hoping they come back. Wow. I just couldn't make the timing work out, but it's on my bucket list to see you two at the Sphere.
I'm taking you to the Sphere.
Perfect.
But you, as soon as you, I don't follow you too, but as soon as you see them come back, I'm taking you to the Sphere.
I'm watching.
All right. So you're in high school. You're realizing this in high school to compare yourself to yourself, or that happened after high school?
No, that happened after high school. I think in high school, you're just so caught up in the day to day, and do I have the right designer jeans? And incidentally, was one of my first businesses. I started in high school. I sold designer jeans. Now, nobody listening to this podcast, and I'm assuming the vintage is a lot younger than us, Matt, will know the name Jordache or Sergio Valente or Calvin Klein, but big in my day. And so I got myself a vendor's license. I got myself a supplier and sold designer jeans out of my locker, which is a really cool way to meet girls, because at the end of the day, I'd come to my locker and there'd be about, maybe a half a dozen girls waiting.
Oh, you sold women's jeans? You didn't sell men's?
Jeans were pretty much unisex back then.
Okay.
And so they'd be waiting with their order. I want the Sergio Valente. I want the Calvin Kleins. This is the pocket I want. And they'd give me the cash. I had no accounts receivable, because if you didn't pay me cash up front, I wasn't getting them for you. Then I'd go to my supplier at night, all legal. And back then, you could actually buy 6 or 12 pairs at a time. Today, you'd have to place orders for hundreds of dozens before anyone would talk to you. But that was kind of the era I grew up in. So, had my first entrepreneurial experience in high school. And that's what kind of set me on the path I was at.
Did you know that you were an entrepreneur when you had that entrepreneurial experience? Did you even know what an entrepreneur was?
Well, you know what? I'm going to say the best thing my father ever did for me, and I told him this, he just passed about a year ago, but I said, he got me, when I was in high school, he got me a job in a factory. It paid very well, but I hated every minute of it. I hated being there a half an hour. My dad was one of these guys where if you're starting work at 7:30, you're there at 7, and you get a coffee and you kind of ease into the day, but by 7:30, you're ready to go. And so I'd work from 7:30 to 3:30 every day, and it was not fun work. And I remember sweeping the floor of the warehouse, and in my mind, I'm building these entrepreneurial plans, because I knew this was not the life I was going to live. I was going to be the guy that pulled up in front of the building with the nice Cadillac and the nice suit and the banker's hours. And those guys were the sales guys, and I was not going to be the guy working in the warehouse, enabling those guys to live the lifestyle I wanted to live.
Well, I got down here to my, rental house, ground floor office that has bad lighting for podcasts. And I got here at 6:45 this morning, and I'll be here without a break until 6 o'clock this evening. I wish that I had those banker's hours that you're talking about. Yeah. I don't know too many entrepreneurs that I had those banker's hours for a while, and my company started going down. So I got out of those banker's hours. But so I just want to stop for a second.
You know what the difference is there, Matt?
What?
You're there at 6:45 and you're going to work till 6, but you love what you do. And so you're never working a day in your life when you explain to me what you're doing. But when you love it, you're not working.
Yeah, I do what I do for work, for fun. I coach people in business for work. Today's my day, by the way, is doing one-page plans for people's personal lives that I work with. We do life planning.
Perfect.
Nobody does that. I do that with my friends' kids, my kids' friends. I help them figure out their careers. I do that at work. It's what I love to do. So and you love what you do. So I want to get to this entrepreneurial gene, though, that you realized you had in high school. I kind of thought I had in high school. It gave me the confidence to try out being an entrepreneur in college, gave you the confidence to try out being an entrepreneur. So one, you have to be unemployable. So first off, unemployable.
Yeah, I checked that box.
Yes. And then how else would someone listening know that they have the entrepreneurial gene?
They don't like to take instruction from others. So I think the biggest thing that drove me in the success of my business wasn't the money. I mean, the money came, but it was the freedom I had. Now, to your point, it doesn't sound like you have a lot of freedom working from 6:45 till 6 p.m. every day, but you choose to do it. Yeah. Somebody's not telling you, you have to do it. You have to be here at 6:45. You can't leave till 6. You get a 15-minute break at 10:30. You can take an hour for lunch. What really drove me to be a successful entrepreneur is to continue to have the freedom to set my own agenda, set my own hours, travel when I wanted to travel, golf when I wanted to golf, hang out with friends when I wanted to. If I didn't want to go to the office one day and work from home, I had that freedom. Now, that's a lot more common post-COVID. Wasn't so common before COVID. So the freedom, that's what drove me. And so I knew at a very young age, you said unemployable, perfect term, because I did not like to take instruction. I hated having someone tell me what to do. And that's when I knew, okay, like I'm never going to be an employee. I can't. It'd be like prison for me.
So I don't know that all entrepreneurs are an 8 on the Enigma scale like you and I, or a D on the DISC scale like you and I. I know there are some that can take instruction from others. And I know that there are some that, you know, organize their lives to where they're held accountable because they don't want the freedom. But I would say most are unemployable, don't like to take instruction, strive for freedom. Another common trait, they have a vision that they can get others to follow behind, whether that's people that give them money or people that come employ, work for them. They are able to put together ideas and finances to pursue a path that they see as exciting. I think entrepreneurs have a vision of something's broken and they're going to fix it. You're in the insurance industry. Boring is all hell, right? But you built this.
Well, no, it isn't. But yeah, that's the perception for sure.
Okay. But you, that business is never boring. And I like that you fight. I like that you fight. But you bring something new to it. You bring a different angle to it. How can I do it faster, better, cheaper? That's all about being an entrepreneur. So you're starting to figure that out in high school. Were you getting good grades? Was there anything on your resume besides selling Z Cavaricci? You can't forget that brand, Z Cavaricci jeans.
Oh, I think that might have been a little after my my tenure in the jean business.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I was a terrible student. I hated school. Again, probably sitting there listening to someone else tell me what to do. Probably, you know, is a good reason for that. But, you know, it didn't matter because I was learning all the time. I didn't realize it at the time, but I was learning just not in school. And my whole life has been that. And hence why I eventually joined the Entrepreneurs Organization was I kind of felt I needed to backfill some of the learning opportunities that I didn't have when I was younger. So I never went to university. I got my degree in the School of Hard Knocks. It was primarily because I started a business in high school. I knew my parents weren't in the position to pay for my tuition, so it was going to be up to me. I intended to go to university, but started my first company in high school and carried it on after I left high school and eventually grew it to the point where I got bought out. So I had my first exit very young in life. I thought it was a lot of money. It really wasn't. But the other thing is you kind of get trapped in, you know, I had a car payment, I had a Visa bill every month. So I thought, well, I got to keep earning money to pay these things. I can't just stop earning and go back to university now. So that's kind of what put me on the path. And in hindsight, I don't regret that. Maybe some of the fun aspect of university I missed out on for sure. But I don't think I'm any less educated today by not going to university. Now, I'm not condoning not pursuing, you know, furthering your education because I made sure all my children went to university and got degrees. And that was more out of wanting them to be able to start something and complete it and understanding that that's a very important value in life. I'm not saying don't pursue education, but in my personal experience, I didn't, in hindsight now, I don't think I'm lacking in education.
Well, you and I went around the world for many a year and I was in charge of learning and you were in charge of membership. And then we were on the global board, and there was one year where I saw 100 different speakers in one year, and all of them, well, not all of them, but most of them had written books, and maybe I read their books. I don't know what degree that's equivalent to in that one year, but 100 hours of course instruction and probably another 100 hours of reading. I mean, that's half a college degree. That might be a master's.
And don't discount the value of traveling and understanding other cultures and seeing other countries and learning from other people.
Wait a second. Where's my flag? I need to get, I've traveled with you. I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about, understanding other cultures, because I've been with you. And by the way, Darton Case's brother gave me this sweater.
Oh, did he? I just saw him last week.
So you and Darton Case, I think, discovered other Hard Rock cafes in other countries. Yeah. I think Jill and I were deep embedded in the culture and you were deep embedded in Hard Rock Cafe. But we'll take no comment.
Don't discount that. You need, when you're traveling to places where you're not quite sure of the food, you got to know where the Hard Rock Cafe is to go and grab a burger and a Long Island iced tea.
How many Hard Rock Cafes have you been to?
Good question. Well over 100. and I know that because I collect those little guitar pins that are unique to each location.
Yeah.
So I've got three cases full of them on display downstairs.
So how many Long Island iced teas have you had at Hard Rock? It's got to be 300.
I'd say more than 1,000.
Okay, good, good. And if you don't know what a Long Island iced tea is, you have to be Canadian. There's a genetic need that you have to be able to have one, let alone a couple in one sitting. So what was that business that you sold, by the way, that first business?
Okay, so the jean business evolved into a sportswear company. And ironically, I called it California Sportswear.
Yes!
I loved the, you know, that connecting with the California lifestyle and the outdoorsy and the surfing and everything. You know, I was a huge fan of the Beach Boys because I really felt a connection to that whole California lifestyle, which they embodied in their music. So I called it California Sportswear. My logo was a wave cresting with a surfer in it. And we ended up doing all kinds of team outfitting and advertising promotional items and, you know, all kinds of fashion at the time. Now, rugby pants and rugby shirts were big at the time. So I had a supplier that would supply me those. Of course, I told you about the jeans, baseball t-shirts, you know, the white body with the colored sleeves. These were just things people were wearing when I was growing up. And so what happened was one of my suppliers that I bought the t-shirts from, he approached me and said, hey, I want to sell direct to the consumer as well, but I can't do that. I'd like to start a division, the name of his company, it's not important. But he was manufacturing and he felt it would be a conflict if he went direct to the consumer as well. So he bought me out for what I thought was a lot of money at the time. It was, because more money than I had. But it was my first lesson in being an employee and the one and only time in my life I was an employee other than my high school.
Oh, you stayed on.
Yeah. So that's why he bought me out. He didn't buy me out because I had built something of value. He wanted me. And so, but what I didn't realize was he had a partner, a silent partner, who disagreed with him starting a division that went directly to the customer. He felt it was a huge conflict. And what I learned the hard way was the guy with the money usually wins. And so his silent partner was putting up the money. And I didn't even realize he had a silent partner, but his name was Gary. He came to me one day and said, hey, we got to shut down this division. Sorry about your luck, but my partner won't allow me to continue doing this. So that was my experience of not being in control of my destiny, having someone else be able to make decisions affecting me personally. And that's when I vowed I will never work for anyone else again.
Well, and mine was, I worked for Paul Jakubowski at the Harbor Restaurant in Santa Barbara. And he was like the cool boss, but also the negligent boss. And I had one thing I wanted, don't schedule me on my birthday. Yeah. And he just ignored me, told me I had to come in on my birthday. And I no-showed, called him up and quit and said, I'll never work for somebody again in my life.
Are you enjoying the show thus far? We go through so many resources and links with this podcast, it's tough to keep up. I get it. That's why Matt and the rest of the team put together the Edge of Excellence Bundle. In it, you'll find different tools that relate to overarching themes and topics of the show. Things like DISC assessment tools, time management strategies and tactics, stress and anxiety management tools, exclusive videos and episodes from this podcast that is not released anywhere else, and so much more. The best part? As a valued listener of this show, you can access the Edge of Excellence bundle 100% for free of charge. That's right, for simply being awesome and tuning in. To get access, all you have to do is go to www.collegeworks.com/podcast and fill out the short form there for us to get the bundle over to you. Once again, it's www.collegeworks.com/podcast. Now, back to the show.
And it's that loss of freedom. It's that controlling of your destiny. So what was business too? So all of a sudden you're unemployed. You didn't go to college. You're unemployable. You realize you need freedom. What do you do then instead of going into college? Most of the time we're going to talk about what you did in college to get ahead. What did you do then to get ahead?
Yeah, well, and I probably didn't consider myself a business person at the time. I considered myself more of a salesperson. And so I started selling insurance. And even though technically I was working for someone else, I never looked at it that way. I always looked at it, hey, I eat what I kill, and I'm running my own little business within a business. And so I started with the firm in 85 as a, we call them producers, an account exec, a salesperson. And I found I was really good at it, mostly
was
because
it called Benson Insurance.
It was called Bruce Benson Insurance at the time. I was good at it, and primarily because I could sell, and I knew how to network, and that's an important thing. Hopefully, we can touch on that in a bit. But I grew a book of business, and I kind of got to the point where I said, "Okay," I approached the owner and said, "You know, I think I'm ready to go out on my own and hang my own shingle out. And I've got a vision for what I want to accomplish. And I just think it's time." And very surprised at the response. And the response was, well, longer conversation, but why don't you just buy me out? Why don't you buy this firm? And sounds like you can accomplish more with having an existing firm than going out and starting from scratch. So one thing led to another. I didn't have any money. It cost me $1 million to buy him out. I probably had about $100,000 in equity that I tapped into. And I begged, borrowed, and stole the other money. And I didn't literally steal it, but I had some friends that I got some private money through some mutual friends and bought Bruce out in 1991. So 6 years after I started in the business. And we were a little $3 million annual sales shop, 90% personal lines, that's house and car insurance. And my vision was to really grow the commercial side of the business. And at first, I had a target to get it to $10 million in sales. And then, so I bumbled along, got to about $6 million in annual sales after I bought them out. And then I discovered what you've been talking about and alluded to a number of times, EO. And so I was a $6 million sales company at the time. And as you and I, you touched on a few minutes ago, a little over a month ago, had an exit over nine figures. So phenomenal growth over a period of time. We did a lot of acquisitions. We did grow it to $160 million in annual sales. And 50% of that was in commercial lines and 50% was in personal lines, which was always the vision I had. Not always, sorry. I had my first vision was to get it to 10 million. And then after that, I kind of realized, okay, I'm thinking way too small here. And there's a story around how I got around thinking too small.
I don't know how many hours I've spent talking to you in the Mekong Delta on a boat where there's nothing to do but sit around and talk. In Saudi Arabia, when they didn't have alcohol, and we would wander around the hotel lobby from like 5 till 9 o'clock with nothing to do talking. Germany. I mean, we've been, I've probably been to 40 countries with you. And we've talked, I don't know how many hours we've talked, but I bet we've talked over 2,000 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Easy. I did not know that your story is the exact same story as mine. So I just want
maybe that's why we hit it off so well.
Yeah, I just want to back up a little bit. So you start off, you're a little bit unemployable. You want freedom. You want to control your destiny. So you get a little business going. And that's how entrepreneurship starts. Then you get into a bigger situation where you have other people, especially if you're taking over someone else's company, and you got to have that vision and that strategy of how can we do better? We're going to shift from retail to enterprise level or commercial level insurance, and you switch 50% of the company over that way over time. We're going to grow to $10 million. Just so you know, Jeff and I worked for a company. We were leaving. They said, why don't you buy us out? We couldn't buy the whole thing. We bought half of it. We had a goal, the four of us, National Services Group, to be a national services business. We were a group of people. Our goal was to get 10 $1 million divisions. And then the goal just keeps going up and up and up. And now we're over $300 million. And we have, I don't even know how many divisions, three different brands. But I'm lucky where I have partners that they could come in and come up with a vision. I've got one partner, two partners on the East Coast that are just crushing it with this solid vision. They didn't really like working in the student business, and they came up with a different vision and been driving the vision of it's customer service and marketing efficiency is where they've cornerstone, but they're all about customer service, and it attracts that group of people. You were all about this growth and this, I guess, wise path of sales, and you attract different people. So you have to get rid of some people that don't fit, get some new people that do fit. And you're in the same business from 1991 until 2023, or you're still there, 2024.
And they kept me on. And the only reason I'm now back to being an employee was the compensation package was too generous to walk away from. So they threw the numbers at me, and I said, yeah, I'd kind of be dumb not to do it.
So, yeah.
But here I am.
And you didn't sell your soul. You love what you do. You took a leap of faith that being an employee again would be okay. And I've talked to you about it.
Yeah.
You are doing okay. They're not the bosses of the past.
No. And you know what, Matt? I kind of said that a little tongue in cheek. The primary motivator for me to stay on was I wanted to ensure the people that did help me get to where I am today. So my COO, my sales manager, my controller, who's been a rock star for 30 years with my firm. I wanted to ensure that they were going to be good and like they were going to be fine. So through the whole negotiations, I made sure they were looked after. But you know, they're a little younger, so they got a little more runway ahead of them. I didn't want them to feel like I'm just leaving them and here's the new owner, best of luck. I wanted a period of, so my employment contract is 4 years, and I wanted a period of time, whether I last 4 years is another story or not, but I wanted a transition period more to protect the people that I felt were extremely loyal to me along the way. And so that's primarily why I just didn't take the money, walk away, and go down to my house in Naples, Florida.
Well, that goes to the foundation of our friendship. And that goes to that's not on our entrepreneurial gene thing. Most entrepreneurs, and you and I know a lot of them, have a set of values where they honor their commitments. They're looking to contribute. They're looking to help everyone grow. They're the tide that floats all boats. Now, there are entrepreneurs that squash people and walk on people. But what happens to those people is they get a reputation and they have to move a lot. And people don't want to do business with them. Most of them have the reputation that you have or I have. We're in it for the fun. We're in it for the growth. We're in it for the game. We're in it for the wins. And we want to bring those with us. So I've heard the story of people sticking around to make sure their team is taken care of. Yeah. I've heard it many times. I've heard the story of people not taking deals because they were worried about the team. And if you're watching TV about entrepreneurs, you might get a different viewpoint because the story of this person that totally trashed everybody else makes a better movie than the story of the person that helped everybody else. But I think that's a common piece of the entrepreneurial gene. They're making it better, not for themselves, for everybody. And you get rewarded for it. And maybe we get rewarded too much. I don't know. I don't think so. But that's, I think that's common in entrepreneurship.
I'll give you a great example just to expand on what you said. So in the last 14 years, we did 13 acquisitions. So, you know, a lot of our growth was through acquisition. We had some organic growth, but I couldn't get there quick enough without acquiring. But I went into every deal with the goal of this has to be a win-win. So if the purchaser and the vendor couldn't win equally, and obviously it's not equal, the result isn't equal, but through the process, if the guy I was buying or the individual firm we were buying, if they couldn't benefit from it, then I wasn't interested in the deal. And I'll tell you what happened as a result. So I always had the goal of win-win. I always did what I said I was going to do. So if during the lead up to the close, I said we were going to do this, 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 and this afterwards, I made sure we did every one of those things. And so as a result, the next deal I went into, if people felt a little apprehensive, because, you know, whenever you're selling your business, you've got questions, you don't know if you're selling to the right party, whatnot, I would always have somebody, I said, okay, we just did a deal with Dave 2 years ago, go talk to Dave about how that went. And Dave would be able to say, no, you know what, Steve operated with integrity. He, everything he said he was going to do, he did. Even if it was costing us money or it wasn't in my benefit, I always did what I was going to say. I always did what I said I was going to do. And so then the second deal, I had a sense of confidence that, okay, I feel a lot better now and would proceed. And so I had this path, I had this history and this legacy of doing good deals and being honest and doing what I said I was going to do. That helped me close other deals. And so, you know, that's the outcome of operating the way you just described.
And yeah, I know you want to talk about some of the things you wish you knew.
Yeah.
Win-win. Here, I'll list off the things that you and I both agree on. If everything's win-win, everything becomes easier after that. And I've always been a win-win guy. You were always a win-win guy. I didn't realize the value of that. Integrity. I remember the day I found out what integrity was when this customer of mine, Alan Gaines, said to me, I've never met anyone in business that has the integrity you have. And I drove back to UC Santa Barbara and looked up what integrity is. Do what you say you're going to do, when you say you're going to do it, and how you say you're going to do it. That's integrity. Yeah. And then reputation matters. I didn't know reputation mattered so much because I was had that high school mindset that the womanizer and the arrogant ass, and you know, now we call them douchebags, but the douchebag, that's the reputation I want because that's the one that everybody thinks is cool. And then what happens at about 23 years old, that's the loser. And the cool person's the one that does the win-win and that takes care of people and cares about integrity and cares about values. There's a flip-flop from like your teens to your 20s. So I want to give you a second just to talk about the networking because you said you wanted to talk about networking and the value of networking.
Yeah.
So that's something that you wish you knew back in the day. So that fits the genre.
No, I think this is one of the things I think I knew, even though I didn't realize I knew it. So networking, typically, you know, people talk about networking a lot and it's always it's got this, you know, stigma of you get in a bunch of rooms, hand your business card out, you try to do business with each other and you're networking. And that is so wrong. That is so ass backwards. Networking is building a network of people you build relationships with. And I always realize that Matt, if I could connect you with, say, our friend Darton, and you two could do a deal and the outcome is great, to me, that's good networking. And that's and without me having any expectation to get anything out of it, that's networking. When you go into relationships to see how you can improve someone else's life, and I know that's a big core value of yours, and without any expectation of getting anything in return. But guess what? It always does come back and gives you a benefit down the road somehow. You always do benefit. And I learned that early in life, probably in high school, that that's real networking, building real relationships. And by the way, showing up, getting out there if you and I didn't join EO and go to the meetings and go to our forum and go to all these places around the world, how would we meet the people we met along the way? Showing up, operate without expectation of getting anything back, and just being yourself. That's what networking is. And that's what I've experienced in my life.
Because then you are helpful. Then you are useful. And I think of it as palm down giving. I don't want anything back. It's not palm up. It's palm down. Someone said, what am I called? A super connector. I'm a super connector. But why am I a super connector?
Because it's in your DNA.
If someone wants to go into insurance and they're talking to me, I say, call Steve. Mm-hmm. And Steve goes and talks to that person. Or they want to grow their business for a nine-figure exit. What did Steve do? They want to, they're getting bought out and they have to stick around for 4 years. Talk to Steve. Because Steve may have someone talk to me. And Steve may talk to 10 people that I send him and me only one person, but that's not how we look at it. It's I call it a favor brokerage. There's all these people around. And that's what I love about EO. You're not allowed to solicit.
Right.
You're not. And if you're a solicitor, if you're selfish, you get kicked out. Yeah. So we don't even allow that. Same with YPO. It's people that are just there to help people. I haven't thought of it as networking before, but I guess it's exactly what it is. I could get anything I want, anywhere I want, at any moment I want, because I've done a lot of things for other people, never asked for anything in return. I do like the jet flights. I do like the private jet flights and the sports teams. I do ask for that sometimes. But it's not about that. It's about I'll help you and you help him and he'll help the other person. And we have this web of selfless favors. And maybe that's an entrepreneurial gene too. Again, most of the entrepreneurs lift all boats. I think it's hard to build a business when you're squashing on people. And there's a person that we both know that built a pretty successful business, but it's run out of runway because he constantly squashes people and fires all his executive team and takes their stock back in some crazy way and then fires the next ones. And now no one will work with him. And his business has plateaued. And now he's going to have to move to a different industry or something like that. Yeah. That's not most entrepreneurs. Most entrepreneurs are networking the way you're talking about. They love the game. We love it. We love helping people out. I love to know your success so I can apply it to my life. And that's a win for me when I try to help you out. Yeah, it's not about passing out. I wish someone would have said this on my second episode. Nicole McMackin talked about networking and the value of, she said, your net worth is your network. But I was missing a piece. Yeah. And the piece that's missing is not for yourself.
Right.
Like Nicole and I are best of friends. She does favors for me. I do favors for her. I send her people all the time to talk to. It's your network of people you're helping and people you've never wanted anything from and people that see you as a value add in their business, but they're not trying to suck you dry. If you get the networking where people are always trying to suck you dry or always want something from you, it gets boring. Or the mentee that always wants something. It gets boring. It's about doing as much as you can for as many people. And that might be part of the entrepreneurial gene. That might be.
I agree. And you build up such a trust. And that's the key. When you trust somebody, you want to do business with them. So you mentioned in EO, you can't solicit, which is a great rule, by the way, because it creates a safe environment for you to attend events and whatnot. You know you're not going to be beat on to buy somebody's product. But over time, you build such a trust. I bet you I have 100 clients in my insurance business that are EO members that I never once solicited ever. Yeah. But the trust was there that they came to me.
Yeah. And you would feel dirty. I don't do business with friends. I feel dirty. Yeah. I have a friend that did business with me without me knowing. I sent him a refund check for the overhead on the job because I just don't do that. And I'm just paying attention to the time here. We didn't get into insurance and what you did into in insurance. We got into entrepreneurship. But Ken, for someone that's thinking about the insurance business, you mentioned retail, you mentioned commercial. Give us the overview of insurance and what you specialized in at Benson Kierley.
Yeah. So I personally specialized in commercial insurance, but you know what? I would look at myself again. I looked at it differently. So you said insurance earlier in the conversation, you made a comment, insurance boring. Yeah. Insurance in itself is, but the business, it's not. Every day was different. I'd go out and visit with clients. I'd take clients to hockey games, which is a big thing up here in Canadiana.
Yeah.
you know, and we'd golf, but it every day was different. And it's about building relationships. So I kind of evolved the insurance business to more of everything we learned in EO along the way that we applied in our businesses. I thought, well, how can I help my clients do this? And so my mandate for, say, the last 10 years was, and how we grew dramatically, was I would bring business resources to the table, not insurance resources. Insurance was a table stake, right? Everybody, if you were going to be a successful insurance brokerage, you had to have great service, great products, pricing couldn't be out of the world, right? That's a table stake. But that's what most people would say, well, why is your business different? Well, we have great service, we have great prices. Okay, great. So does everyone else. How are you different? So I would bring business, real business value to the relationship. We did our annually Be Great seminar, where I'd bring in speakers like John DeJulius or Warren Rustan or Vern Harnish. We never once talked about insurance. I'd have 400 or so of my commercial customers in that room learning about scaling their business, customer service, leadership. And they'd all look around and go, well, you know, it's not Benson Kierley's job to help me better my customer service. They're my insurance broker. But that's where we looked and said, how can we be different? How can I bring real value to the table so that my customers don't want to ever leave because they'd be cut off from the value we're bringing? So we made price irrelevant to an extent. I mean, you can't be stupid with your pricing. But so that's what I did. And I would say that's one of the biggest part of our successes. We had a magazine we'd send out to 20,000 people every month, commercial prospects. And there's no mention of insurance in these magazines. They're all business focused. Of course, they would know where it came from and there'd be ads and stuff in there for us. But, you know, those are the types of things we did. We'd bring experts to the table, you know, on contracts. So if I had a client that would say to me, you know, really struggling with protecting myself, and then, okay, great, I'm going to bring a lawyer to the table and we're going to look at all your contracts and we're going to tighten them up and protect you more. Now that is a risk management element, but it's bringing expertise to the table. So I think that's where we really focused, and that's what really drove our success and how we were able to grow as organically as we did on top of the acquisitions along the way.
Yeah, by the way, my business is rebuild other people's structures, whether it's roofs or windows or doors or siding or decks or just painting them. Nothing less sexy than that. But it's the business, it's the systems, the levers that you're moving, the wins, the unique ability, back to your definition, your unique ability to bring learning to a group because you were deep into that. Why not bring it to another group? And you know, and your definition of entrepreneurship, you've got this differentiating factor that's like your networking. It's real value. It's trust. It's what you want to do. The entrepreneur wants to deliver real value and doesn't really care if they get anything back for it. And then every once in a while, you get a few clients and you get a reputation. You realize, oh, wait a second. Why am I successful? Oh, because all my life, I've done a bunch of things to help the world out and not really caring. And they wanted to be part of my life. You can't go chase the mighty dollar. You can't go chase it. It never works. You have to kind of avoid it and then it comes, which is crazy. And I know we're running out of time. I got to give you the last question. Well, there's two questions I have for you. One, is there anything else you would want to share with your 20-something-year-old self or your kids and grandkids that damn well better listen to this that you haven't mentioned? Any last little tidbits?
Yeah, a couple of easy low-hanging fruit things. Set goals. But don't just set them, share them with others. Because guess what? Other people want to help. And I've got numerous stories I can share where I've shared my goals with other people. They help me accomplish them. Get a mentor. I know that's a big part of your life. You're mentoring kids, young students, developing them into entrepreneurs. It's so important to get a mentor. I wish I had learned that much earlier. Understand what your core values are. When you know what your values are, decisions are easy. And too often we just kind of go through life not even understanding and connecting with our values. You have them, you know, it's so important. You said this, your network is your net worth. I couldn't believe it. I can't stress this enough. Rock stars hang out with rock stars. Seek out peer-to-peer groups. I often said to my kids growing up, you show me your friends, I'll show you your future. Make sure you're in a network of people that you can get value from and you can learn from, and they're going to push you to be better all the time. And the last one I'd share, Matt, is expect to fail and enjoy the process of failing, because guess what? You're learning. Our friend Brian Scudamore owns 1-800-GOT-JUNK. He wrote a whole book on this. And the book's title is called WTF, and it stands for Willing to Fail. And he's got a whole book of all the failures he's had in his life. And guess what? He's on his way to being a billion-dollar company. He's now a shark. He's the equivalent of Shark Tank in Canada, Dragon's Den. He's now on Dragon's Den doing things that Kevin O'Leary and Mark Cuban are doing in the U.S. Enjoy the journey. And when you fail, just pick yourself back up, because every time you fail, you're getting closer to success.
And compete, because I'm going to smoke Brian Scudamore on the road to a billion. Guarantee okay. Faster.
All right.
Expect to fail. Your network is your net worth. Values, by the way, we did a podcast with Darius Miserate, so you can look it up.
Darius, well, I'll see him next week at Gathering of Titans in Boston.
You know he's in my forum, right?
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Darius and I had lunch with Darius here. I was in Austin, didn't see him a couple of days ago, but he wrote a book on the core value equation. Yep. Plug for him, setting goals and sharing with others, and mentorship. Yesterday, I spent 45 minutes on my drive home from the airport talking to someone that was an employee of mine 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And she's calling up to pick my brain about her next career and which way to go. And I'm gladly having the conversation with her because I value her, but I also feel I need to, because she's having conversations with my employees now about college work. She works at Goldman Sachs. I got her the job.
Yeah. Ah, great.
She thought I did her a favor. I was doing her a favor for something she'd done before she saved someone's life in my company. I told her, I'll do anything you need for the rest of your life. And she's constantly delivering value. So if she calls, and maybe I'm a mentor to her, I'm going to take that call because it's not one-sided. I feel like I owe her. Last question, then you're out of here. Biggest sacrifice that you made back in your 20s that at the time was just brutal. Maybe it was not going to college. And you look back and you're like, thank God I made that sacrifice. What was it?
That's a good question. I don't look at anything I've done in my life as sacrificing.
Well. You are close friends with Todd Mendenhall.
Yeah.
And I've been around many a sacrifice you've made with that person being his friends. Well, and poor Carlo Santoro. Plug out to both those guys. Poor Carlo, lots of sacrifices around Todd Mendenhall. But other than Todd, what sacrifices?
Yeah, you know what? Maybe early building my business, not spending as much time with the family as I should have. I mean, that's a very common statement any entrepreneurial business owner will say. But you know what? I always made sure I never missed a hockey game, never missed a sporting event. I came home for dinner every night and then went back to the office. So I didn't miss dinners with my family. I don't know that my kids right now would say to you, oh yeah, dad wasn't around in the early years, because they were the early years. They don't remember them. But at least I can look back and say, okay, yeah, maybe I did spend a little too much time then, but guess what? Whole family's benefiting now for the sweat labor I put in earlier.
And there's perceptions too. What you perceive as not very much time is different than someone that really doesn't put enough time in. If you're there at the sporting events, you're there at the dinner table, you're there when they need to cry on your shoulder. I was there. So I know you put enough time. Well, Steve, I know I'm 3 minutes over, but you don't really work that hard anymore. So not that big of a deal. I'm taking back. Thank you for letting me call on you for a favor and ask you for something. And you were quick.
It was my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for coming on the Edge of Excellence and sharing your wisdom today.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Matt. Have a great day.
You too.
I hope you enjoyed that episode today on the Edge of Excellence podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to this. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this exact episode with them. This show exists to showcase what is possible when young leaders are willing to step out of their comfort zone and choose to excel in their lives. To learn more about our internship for young and ambitious students, www.oneinternship.com/podcast to see if it's something that makes sense for you. Once again, it is www.oneinternship.com/podcast. Let this be a reminder for you to live on the edge of excellence in your business and life. See you next time.